The PE Umbrella, episode 137. Welcome to the PE Umbrella podcast with Ryan Ellis. Join me as I dig deep into the world of PE, interviewing inspiring practitioners from around the world, share my own teaching reflections, and discuss some awesome resources that you can use in your classroom. So what are you waiting for? Come on over and join me under the PE Umbrella. Hello there, everybody, and welcome to the PE Umbrella podcast. And as always, thank you for joining me today. With me under the umbrella this week is primary and secondary PE teacher Rachel Ford. Thanks for joining us, Rachel. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, and thanks for having me.
Oh, no, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, for any of those listeners who are joining us under the umbrella this week, could you just start off, Rachel, by telling us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, secondary trade PE teacher. And once graduated, kind of got straight out of teaching in the UK and went over to teach in Malaysia. So I was teaching in Malaysia for 4 years. Two of those years was secondary only. And then in my third year, I got chucked into nursery, reception, primary PE. And that's where my primary PE journey started, really. Did another 2 years in Malaysia, and now I'm in China, again teaching KG right through to grade 7. So actually a lot more primary now, and a lot more KG, which, yeah, if you'd have told me when I was in uni that I was going to be teaching KG at primary, I'd have said no way. But actually now really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, and that's something which, you know, a lot of people do find. I've noticed in the past, they find that they're really nervous about going lower down school or changing, transitioning age groups. But once they get thrown in there and have a go, that they really enjoy the younger children. And that's something I certainly found when I started going lower and lower down as well. And we'll dive into maybe some of the things you've found with that age group later on in this interview and ask you your opinions on how you think it's gone so far. But you mentioned that off the bat there, once you trained as a teacher, you were straight away from the UK, out of the country, you went abroad to teach. What was the reasoning behind that?
It was a number of reasons. I mean, when I was kind of getting close to qualifying and looking for jobs, there just wasn't much in secondary PE at all, or what was there was not NQT friendly. So there just weren't many options. And as I was doing my teacher training and talking to the teachers in the departments, when I was talking to them about if they'd taught in other schools, if they were planning to move, they were almost in a situation where they were scared to try and move anywhere else because of the uncertainty. Mm. And I just didn't really want to get stuck in a school where I wasn't happy, but I was too scared to leave because there weren't any other jobs out there.
Yeah, and I can see that. Yeah. People do that, don't they? And that's something which I think is a big shame in teaching profession in general. But part of me also thinks I don't blame them, that they're in a school, and if they're in a school which happens to be very, very good, you get the teachers who will stay there for virtually their entire career or a long period of time. And maybe that's due to the fact they know they're in a really good school in terms of the students and perhaps even the senior leadership. So why would they move elsewhere? But then the other part of me thinks, well, there are other things out there. There's a different way of working in every single school you'd ever go into. There's something different. Something might be challenging that might be better. And I think you sometimes could do a disservice of yourself if you don't take that option to venture out somewhere else and see what's happening elsewhere. And that's been a huge help for me in my own PE professional development, is being able to see what's going on in a variety of primary schools here in the UK. So of course you ventured over to Malaysia, teaching out there, recently moved over to China, now you're teaching over there. And I know that when you moved to China, you said, and I remember seeing a tweet at the time saying you were going to be teaching kindergarten, so EYFS sort of age PE that you'd never really ventured to before. And you just said in the intro that that's something you started to really enjoy a bit now. So how have you found teaching kindergarten? What's been any surprises? What's been any difficulties so far with that age group for you?
Well, yeah, I was really, really scared. And I love Twitter as kind of easy professional development. So I kind of called out asking for any advice. Challenges wise, I mean, especially with China, the communication, their English isn't very advanced. So the communication can be very limited at times. And I just didn't know how to get into a KG kid's head, really. I mean, in secondary, I kind of knew what I was looking for and knew what they'd want from the lesson and what they'd engage with. And KG, I was completely, completely lost. Like, do they even know what competition is? You know, what are they going to buy into? And I'm lucky enough to be in a really supportive department. I kind of just share ideas all the time and ask questions all the time. And KG just love a good story. I don't think they're really that bothered about what they're doing physically. If there's a story behind it and there's some sort of challenge in this story and some treasure to collect or some monster to run past, they absolutely love it. So I find myself making up all sorts of little stories to introduce games and, you know, reasons, challenges you've got to do, and then you collect your treasure and they're running about and throwing at targets and dodging taggers who are monsters and all these things that as a PE teacher you look back and think, fantastic. But in their heads, they've got a little mission and story to follow, and they're loving it. And I quite love making these stories up, actually. I'm like, in the morning, I have to get up early and walk the dog, and I find myself telling my dog all the stories that I'm going to tell him less than a day.
I love that.
It's
one of those things I've mentioned on many episodes of the PE Umbrella before, but it's the way you've just described it. It's simply, in my eyes, it's disguising the children's learning. Like you said, they are doing lots of physical, fundamental skills, if you like, but it's been disguised in and packaged up in a different world. They've got a mission to accomplish, like you said, a monster to defeat or run past, treasure to collect. And they're just living the dream, if you like, in this world that you've created for them. And the children of a younger age, kindergarten, EYFS, Key Stage 1 over here, love it. And they're eating out of the palm of your hand. And very early on, that's what I discovered when teaching PE lower down school, is that if I can package it up in some kind of story from start to finish, or activities have a theme, the buy-in is enormous. The motivation from the children is usually through the roof, and you can get them doing anything you want to accomplish the goal that you want them to get. And I saw, again, another recent tweet from yourself, Rachel, which was the children playing, I think it was like a Jack and the Beanstalk type activity you'd set up. And they were absorbed in that story, and there was an involvement in rolling objects and knocking down targets and things. Could you share with us perhaps another way in which you've put a story to an activity, or maybe it's your favourite sort of story you've used with kindergarten so far that's had maximum buy-in?
I do love Jack and the Beanstalk. What I like to do is try to talk to the teachers and see what story they're focusing on and try to match my game with that story. So that's where Jack and the Beanstalk came from. They had to hit, the giants had to throw the balls and hit the beanstalk. Jacks had to defend the beanstalks. They're doing Beauty and the Beast, and the message for that story is to be kind, even if people are different, be kind to each other. So we've got a lot of tag games where they have to save each other, and if they're saved, we make sure we're saying thank you and you're welcome. So the manners are coming in there. They're actually slowly starting to understand, you know, and I talk to them about, you could just run straight past your friend and not save them. But you're being kind to them, you're setting them free, even if that means you might get tagged yourself. So you're thinking about somebody else and not just yourself. So I try to match it with whatever story they've got going on. But yes, they're still quite new to it, so I'm still stuff, trying to think these things up. But keeping a little bank.
Thing is you're all, you know, always evolving, always adapting. This is still relatively new for you, and you'll always find ways to want to improve and reflect and get better and change the story. And one thing I've found is that you can use similar activities, but just change the name of the story, and it's even though they're doing the same thing, it becomes a completely different concept to the children. Because rather than have monsters to get past, you go in and past boats in the sea, or it could be literally anything, and it's something new and different. And something that really intrigues me about your situation, which might not find as much over here, other than children who have got, you know, English as an additional language, is you mentioned the language barrier being quite tough, and especially with younger children over there, kindergarten age, I'd imagine that's very tricky. So in my head, I'm thinking you might have maybe visuals around the place to help with some of the very basic core language to help you communicate to them. I mean, when I did my Little Movers classes here in Harrogate, when this is for children 2 to sort of 4 years old, so even younger, but of course they are from English-speaking families, I'd have visuals up around the hall space I was working in, just with a picture of an eye, saying that was eye or ear or mouth or nose or hands or feet. So when I was talking to them and their parents about doing activities, I could point to these things so they knew what I were talking about. How do you find you overcome that barrier with kindergarten in China?
Have a lot of visuals, yeah, absolutely. Kind of walk about with flashcards of whether that be basic instructions, or if we're doing a pirate-based game, you know, a picture of a pirate, so they know. As soon as they see that, usually there's one or two children in the class who translate it, and everybody is on board with what they're meant to be doing. They're quite mature in that way, actually, that usually there's a couple of them that get the English and translate for the rest of the class, which I was really, really surprised with how good at that they were. But a lot of visuals, a lot of me looking like a crazy woman, demonstrating everything.
Oh, yeah.
And just the routine as well. Just, you know, they know where I teach my lessons. They know where they put their water bottles. They know which white line they stand on to start with. You know, when I started teaching KG, everybody said to me that routine was important. But I think when they understand very limited bits of what you're saying, it's even more important, because the minute you lose, you know, you put the water bottles in a different place, and then you're trying to communicate to them a different place, but you still come to this line, it's all changed for them. So the routine is a lot more vital than what I thought it would be.
I think the routine is about routine. I've started to learn, Rachel, which is... It's almost unspoken communication. Especially if you're working with children speaking a different language, or even if you're speaking with young children here in the UK or anywhere around the world for that matter, once it becomes a routine, that's an extra bit of information and communication you don't have to give them, because it becomes an expectation and that's what they know happens. So rather than having to explain where to put their bottles or where to stand, it becomes a natural instinct. So there's less communication, perhaps less for them to have to process, and they can then focus their brains, their minds on the information that is important, which might be the learning for that day. So once you get that down early on, I think that's something which you can take with them through school. And I'm on a huge push at the minute for increased visuals in my own classroom setting in PE, but for anybody else as well, just for simple language barriers that children might not understand. And I've done it in the past, and I've still done it more recently when I've used words that to me are really obvious, and I presume the kids know what it means. But then if I step back, I'm able to think, actually, hang on a minute, I've just been doing gymnastics and talking about travelling. What if one of these 4 or 5 year olds in AYFS year one doesn't know what travelling means? So I've produced a visual to explain that travelling is the same as moving, or it's the same, you know, something different. Even turning. If a child's not got any preconceived notion of what it means to turn, or what the word turning means, there's no point in me saying to them, can you add a turn in your gymnastic sentence? Because to them it might mean nothing. Yeah. So just a simple visual explaining, maybe with an arrow or a line, what does it mean to turn or change direction? And just be as language rich as possible in the environment, so that all children can access or find something they can relate to, whether it's visually or the vocabulary that you use. So I love that you've got flashcards. I think that's a wonderful idea. Something I've never considered here teaching in the UK, but it's probably not as important as it is for you. But if anyone's listening, what Rachel's just said, you know, is absolute gold. That routine early on and sticking to that, especially for the younger children that you teach in schools, is vital, because it's less instruction you have to give. You don't have to tell them where to stand or what to do, because they'll do it. And it's part and parcel of your teaching and the expectation that you have for the children and they have for you. Now, I would wonder if, Rachel, if possible, if moving forward from little chat about EYFS there, if you can reflect on yourself as a PE teacher as a whole. And if I said to you, could you describe in three words only yourself as a PE teacher? What three words spring to mind that would best represent you?
You get asked this a lot on interviews, don't you? Job interviews. I would say passionate. Everybody's going to say passionate, but you've got to be creative and reflective.
Passionate, creative. Love those three. And it's funny, when I ask this question, I always find myself nodding along. And I've had different answers. Passionate often does stand out as one people give, but there's a variety of others. And I'm nodding along to them all. And then I get worried because I think, well, if I was asked this, I don't know which three I'd choose, because I've nodded along to about eight different ones, because they're all very important. It's hard to narrow down. And I always like to just maybe hone in on at least one of these with any guests on the PE umbrella that people have chosen. So I'm going to go into reflective. I'm going to hone in on reflective. Why did you choose that? And is this something which you think is a real important part of your own PE practice, being reflective? Is it reflective on a personal level, on the children's progress? Can you just elaborate a bit more on why you chose that?
I think it's reflective on so many things. I mean, because I was thrown into KG and primary and it wasn't my comfort zone at all, I would find myself really thinking about lessons after I'd taught them, and really reflecting on them and thinking, you know, did the students get anything from it? Did they progress? Did they enjoy? Did I deliver it well? Was I energetic when I delivered it? For KG, I would say a big bit is reflecting on their enjoyment. Did they buy into it? Because I think it's just so important to get them enjoying what they're doing, so as they progress school, they want to be active and they want to be in PE lessons. As we get further through primary, it is a bit more, did they actually progress? You know, was I challenging them? Again, the enjoyment's still there, absolutely, but it's sometimes I think, oh well, they enjoyed that, but I didn't really challenge them. There weren't enough levels to the activity. You know, I had two levels and they got there and I didn't think about what I should have done after that. But then on a personal level, I do like to reflect on a lot of the time if I was approachable during the lesson, was I open for students to come to me, because they can be very honest.
Yeah.
They can be very honest with whether they enjoy an activity or not. They'll let you know if it's boring, they'll let you know if they enjoyed it, which is good. So was I open for the students to come to me and say, Miss, I really enjoyed that lesson, or actually, Miss, I think I'm better than this, which I've been told before, and that has actually made me go back to the staff room and think, right, okay, what can I do next lesson that's going to challenge them?
I think physically and mentally. What you're saying here, Rachel, is as well, is I love how thoughtful and deep you go with these reflections. And you're a bit like myself, and I think there's probably many PE teachers listening. If you're not in this category, then let me know. I'd love to hear from you. But, you know, I often reflect, and I am without a doubt my own harshest critic, and I can reflect on certain moments from lessons gone by of the day. And even if it's gone well, I have a huge tendency to focus on the one negative thing, if there is one. Or even if there wasn't a negative thing, I would find something. And I think it's just in my nature to always strive. I never really take the moments to appreciate the things that went well. I always think, well, how could it have gone better? How can I improve that? How could I have changed it? And is that something you find yourself doing too?
Yeah, you can get stuck in a bit of a rut, can't you, of just thinking what went wrong all the time. And you do have to be really conscious to just step back and think, but actually, compared to last lesson or whatever, this went really well. And this student that usually doesn't really like PE that much was really, really into that game and was running around when usually they're trying to hide at the back and things like that. And it is hard, but I mean, again, I've got a lot to thank my department for, because everybody is just so positive. I think once you start that routine of think what went well and not so much what went wrong, what would change, it becomes a lot more natural to be positive. You really don't want to get stuck in that cycle of making yourself feel bad after every lesson, because it's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, I've heard better phrases than this, but sometimes call it analysis paralysis, where you just sat there and dwelling and, what should I have done? Where can I go? But, what I think is, it's the sign of a really great teacher and someone who cares, who is passionate, when you do reflect and take that time. I just think looking at the small wins and looking at the bigger picture and the little things that have been successes is a better way to go about it. And this is something which, the recent debate over here in the UK particularly, and discussion about the spend of the PE premium that we've had, and having PE teachers or coaches or class teachers teach PE. I don't want to tarnish all class teachers with the same brush, because there are many who are super passionate about teaching PE, but there are equally many who are not and maybe don't care so much about it. And my thought is, PE as a subject, I think it needs that time for reflection if you are going to, differentiate and change activities and try and meet the needs of all children and be creative. And that requires time to sit back and to think and to process and to plan. And quite frankly, it's a tough game to be playing over here now when you're a class teacher and you've got maybe 1 hour, maximum 2 hours of PE a week, and all the focus is on a lot of the core subjects. And that's why I'm starting to think more so about the avenue of having just PE teacher specialists over here in primary is possibly the way to go, because I think it's a tough gig that teachers have, and they do need to be reflective. They do need to be creative. And ultimately, they do need to be passionate, because if you're not passionate and you aren't portraying that to the children you're teaching, then they are not going to feed off that, and why would they be passionate about something you don't care about?
That's what we've got in the international schools I've taught in. It's PE is always taught by a subject specialist from PG or nursery right through, and I think it does make a massive difference, because when it's your subject, you care. You're better educated in it, but ultimately you care about what happens and you think about what's happened. And I've got friends back home, primary teachers, and I know, the stress is on them for your core subjects. PE is seen as a bit of a playtime or a time to let off some steam. So why would they really reflect on it? Whereas a specialist, it's what you do. It's who you are. So you do reflect and you do think about it. And it's definitely something that, since I've been working abroad and there's always been a PE specialist, I think, this is the way it needs to go. Definitely.
Yeah. It's interesting because, I can see in my head, and I think I've overheard examples of this similar phrase before in the past as well, but I think some class teachers accept that if they've done PE and the children have ran around and let off some steam, then it's okay, because they've had a run around, they've done some PE. That's the reflection that goes on, and that's okay, because they've got in their time of PE and they've had a bit of a run around and they've had a full class game of dodgeball or something. But it goes deeper, like you said, when it's who you are, when it's your bread and butter, if you like, it's your thing, the reflecting goes so much deeper than that. And because you care about their development, you care about the intricacies, the individual development and aspects of a lesson, and you aren't reflecting on whether they've been active. You're looking at the more holistic side of things too. And like you've mentioned earlier with some of your kindergarten games, about the development of their social skills, or maybe that affective domain and how they're coping with wins, losses, how it makes them feel. And that's some things that can often get overlooked, I feel, if it isn't your thing and you don't want to go as deep as that. So, for me, having a specialist is maybe the way forward, but I'm not sure. please get in touch if anybody knows of any research out there which shows any significant long-term impact from children who have come from having a specialist PE teacher through school right from start to finish to those who've had generic class teachers over here. I'm not sure if there is research and in what how you could measure that, but I'd certainly be interested.
It would be interesting
to see what. Yeah,
yeah, it would be really interesting
because you know we have to factor in the other environmental factors about home life, and that's where children spend most of their time is at home. So they have ultimately the biggest say. So it's a cog in a larger wheel, but I think there's something to be said about that. Now, I was hoping if we jump forward just a tad here, Rachel, if you'd be able to share with myself and the PE Umbrella listeners today. Could you tell us about maybe a recent teaching success that you have had? So something that's gone well personally, might be an individual lesson with a class or a moment of communication with one student. Can you just pinpoint any recent, could be within the past few months or whatever you can think of, a recent teaching success that you've had and tell us about it?
I think with a grade 2 class that I teach, we were doing gymnastics, and there was, as a whole, the class is great, and they love PE, they love gymnastics, so that was all okay. But there was just one student, one boy, who was just always pushing other students, always trying to get attention from being naughty, basically, which in PE, and especially gymnastics, is just... You know, you can't go there. And I was racking my brains for weeks of how to, without making him sit out, because I don't want to make him sit out. So without doing that, how do I get him in the lesson? How do I get him to be safe and responsible within gymnastics? Because he was a really physically able kid. So I was thinking, I just don't know what to do. And then I think I saw it on Twitter, actually. I'm not sure who said it, but about secret missions and giving students secret missions within a class. And when I read it, it was actually for your more able students to challenge them a bit more. But I thought, I wonder if I give this student a secret mission, if it will just engage him that little bit more and almost distract him from being a bit of a nuisance, basically. So as he came into class one day, I gave him a secret mission of we're focusing on roles, and I wanted him to pick out a different student for each role who should come and demonstrate that role, told him what he'd need to look for. Students quite understanding extension and tension and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, this is what I'm looking for. Do you think while you're doing the gymnastics lesson, you can keep an eye out and look for what for the log teddy bear role? And if you choose them, I'll use them for the demonstration. So he did that for me. Quite impressed. While he was doing lessons, he was still physically active, but he was looking around, and I think he did the ownership, the responsibility of it. He's also allowed to have a round look at different groups, different maps. So I think he felt a bit, walking around, having a look, and then he'd come and whisper who was good at which role, and then I did use them as a demo, and then I kind of went to him and I was like, I don't think I could have spotted that, you spotted the best students at this, and since then I've tried. There's just something very little he has to look at, and that's his responsibility in the class. And I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's a decision. I don't know if it's the responsibility, but he really buys into that. And from him buying into it, I want to keep trusting to discipline him. Other students are happy and safe, and he's still physically active.
Yeah,
he's still involved in the lesson, so
that's great. That's a really, really so far success story. And you know, to find that way which will work for a particular student, and that's obviously been a real game changer for you in your session. And that's the beauty of Twitter, isn't it, and social media, finding ways, things for behaviour management in PE, finding ideas, activities, and adding them to your repertoire. I really enjoyed one, which I haven't tried yet, but I've logged it down and I'm remembering for perhaps when I need it, a recent one, which was to help behaviour too. And I think it was Kyle Bragg who posted this idea. I apologise if it wasn't, but I think it was Kyle. And his was to, if there was a student who was showing challenging behaviour or was making things tricky, he had some hair ties or elastic bands on one of his wrists and his other wrist was empty. And during the session, he'd say to this child, you know, if you were able to show or demonstrate these expectations I show of you without, you know, calling you out on it or saying you've done it well, he'll simply move an elastic band from his wrist onto the other. And the secret mission was essentially for this child, as the lesson went on, to get all of the elastic bands moved from Kyle's wrist, left wrist, to his right wrist. So the child could see if any of the bands had been moved across, but it wasn't sort of called out. And if at the end they'd accomplished that, you know, then there might be a suitable reward and such for that. But I think that was a lovely sort of visual way to try and keep track of behaviour as well, where maybe some of the other students didn't notice it was just between him and the the students as well. So, you know, like I said, there's lots of different ways that you can sort of keep tabs on behaviour. And I like the fact that I think you said you saw perhaps that as an idea, a secret mission on Twitter, but you've not just taken it and done with what it said. You've adapted it for the student that was in your setting, and you said you had a lot of success there from this student. And is this the same class that you're still teaching now, gymnastics, and is it still working for you?
We've just moved on, actually. We've just moved on to Invasion Games. So I think I'm going to keep with the secret mission and, see how it goes from there.
Yeah, that's a lovely idea. And it's hopefully the people listening at the P Umbrella joining us today, you might be able to use that. Maybe you saw Kyle's little elastic band or hair tie one as well, or what I've just explained. Could give that a try, give it a go, see if it works with any of your challenging students. But, you know, you aren't going to find the solution straight away. It's about trying, persevering, and ultimately that's why reflecting is important and trying to adapt this to make it right, and it shows that you care. And having just shared with us what you think is a recent success, and I love that success story you've shared. I think it's absolutely wonderful, Rachel. I'm wondering if you could now go to the other end of the spectrum and tell us about perhaps what you consider the worst lesson you've ever taught. And if you can maybe focus on the primary age range, what's the worst lesson you've ever had or experienced? Why was it the worst? And ultimately, what did you learn from that? And I want you to take us right to that moment when you realised maybe the lesson was crumbling around you and what was happening. But how have you learned from that experience and how has it made you a better teacher now?
Oh God, I know this one straight away. Grade one dance. And I think from the start of the lesson, it was just, you know, the students, the lesson prior to lunch, because it's some lunchtime sport, I was a bit late. So I hadn't set up, the students were running. Yeah, I hadn't set up at all, so I'm trying to get them to sit down while I'm setting up. And from then on, it was just a mess, no control. I was trying to find videos on Just Dance while they were screaming at me what videos they wanted to do. And it was one of those where you were just looking at the clock thinking, when is this over? Because it was gone from the word go, I was like, I cannot save this. And I think the only time I really had them doing something was when the screen was on and they were paying attention to the screen and not me, which gave me a few minutes breather. But also, you know, you walk out and you feel quite useless when a YouTube video is teaching a lesson and not you. And I think that was just, on my part, it was poor preparation. I mean, things were rehearsal day that, you know, something goes on longer than you think to at lunchtime and you get to your lesson late. But I should have got there earlier and set up. I should have definitely, when I was planning, thought exactly which dances I want to use and where I was going to break away. And what I like to do is have a dance and have a dance back on to it. I just really thought it through properly. just kind of thought, okay, dance, let's do Just Dance. So it was just complete poor planning on my part, thinking that I had a great idea without actually thinking how to logistically put it in practice.
I think a huge standout moment for me from what you've just said, and I think it's something everyone must have experienced this, and I know class teachers experience this from what I've seen in the past, and that is turning up, and I know things happen at lunchtimes, playtimes, and sometimes setting up isn't always practical or feasible, and it's finding strategies to help you do it, if possible, before, and getting that extra 5 minutes in, or if not, is there a way to have the students help you, or something you can have them doing while you're setting up? But if you aren't prepared, and having to set something up for the session while the kids are just sat there waiting, and I've experienced this, I've done it before too, it's an invitation for carnage, isn't it? You know, these children want to come in and move and be busy and do something. And if they're just seeing you setting something up on a computer, throwing a couple of cones out, and they're sat there, that's when we can start to see the unwanted behaviours creeping in of getting on each other's nerves or fidgeting, moving around when they shouldn't be and getting up to no good. But they just quite simply want to get busy. And that's something you've taken away there, and you've started to hone, adapt and change. And I think using technology in a way, using the videos, can be lovely. But you're right, we don't want it to take away from the most important person in the room is going to be yourself, the teacher, the leader who's imparting the ideas. And the fact the screen had all their attention and you felt like you were useless in that situation must have been really hard to take. And I'm presuming since then it's something where, do you still use, or have you still used videos to supplement and help? But in what way are you making sure that you are still the focal point and not the technology?
I've still used them. I think it's great to have, if you're doing dance or something like that, have a video on for them to walk into, because, you know, that they're straight into it. They find a little space straight away. They get into the dance. And then once it's finished, it's video off. Okay, sit down, listen to me. And I don't know why it works, but for me, that just works amazing. I definitely don't rely on it. And I definitely don't just think, oh, I'll do Just Dance.
Yeah.
You know, I look at what I'm using and I think about, okay, this dance has got little individual bits and then it's got a team bit of a dance. So we'll stop it there and we'll get them into little teams and we'll learn the dance together and then we'll do it to the video. Or a dance has got lots of different shapes in it. So after that dance, we'll talk about what different shapes were there and we'll do an activity looking at how to link these shapes together and all that kind of stuff. So I think technology is great, and if you've got a big screen in a hall, it's fantastic to use, but you do have to think about, okay, how can I use it but still have a lot of things to do around it where I'm interacting with the students, not just the moment.
I think it's using it as the stimulus or as the support act rather than the main event and the headliner, isn't it? That should be you and it's the children ultimately, and that's the support act. It's something which can come in and supplement and be useful to maybe be that stimulus, give them ideas, maybe give an underlying theme, but ultimately you're able to then use that and take it in many directions that you want to. So that's a lovely, you know, lovely example of a story of a lesson that's gone completely wrong. And I often find with these, you know, I myself find myself nodding along and picturing myself in similar situations. I've had many of them, and I hope the PE Umbrella listeners do as well. So I appreciate you sharing that with us, Rachel. As we get into a few quick fire questions now, just before we start to go down towards the end of this interview, I wonder if you can quickly think off the top of your head, Rachel, of all your years teaching, this could be primary or secondary PE, what's the best class management advice or tip that you could give us?
Be prepared. With your activity, with your setup, I think it makes so much of a difference for any age group. If they walk in and the equipment's there, the cones are out, it's all set up and you've got something ready to go with, and you're there kind of waiting for them to enter your space, I think that's really important, that they feel like they're entering. Because we don't have classrooms, so we haven't got those safe walls. But if we're there already, the students are walking into our space rather than their own kind of mess around space, and then you walk into that. I think that's really vital.
Yeah, that's interesting. So be prepared, be ready. And if I could flip this on its head and sort of speak from a a class teacher's point of view here in the UK. Of course, it's not feasible for myself or anyone else, for that matter, as a teacher to be already in the space waiting for the kids, because often we're with them when they're getting changed or ready into their PE kits. But what I would say is then be at the front of the line, lead them into the space the way you'd want them to enter the space, set the example and the tone of the session. And that might be leading in, going into an imagination walk kind of instant activity. It might be leading them in to tap some emoji smiley faces so you can see how they're coming in and how they're feeling. And it, then if you can, straight into an activity, straight into perhaps a warm-up or something which is going to get their attention immediately to give them no time to acknowledge they're in a wider open environment and want to even misbehave, if that's even something they would consider doing. So I just mentioned coming in and getting straight down to business with an activity. Can you share with us then, Rachel, what your all-time favourite instant activity or warm-up is that just gets the children really excited each time?
I love using the superhero workouts. I don't know if you've seen them. It's like printouts of Spider-Man, Batman, Batwoman, all sorts.
Is it the Derby superhero workout? There's a lot of other ones too.
Yeah. There's loads of them. I love them. And they work with so many different age groups because they're already differentiated with, you know, how many reps or sets you'll do. Mm. And obviously with secondary, you look a bit more at the technique they're using for the different exercises. But with primary, they just love the fact that they get to choose a superhero. And you know, I have them all laminated and like pockets on the wall for them to grab them from. Yeah. So the fact that they can just run in and grab a superhero and go off and find the space and do these exercises, you know, obviously I make sure it's safe, but I'm not going to tell them off if they're not doing the squat perfect.
Yeah,
they just buy into the superhero aspect of it and it gets them active as soon as they walk in. Yeah.
That's nice.
They're a bit tired, so they'll sit down and listen to you. So, I love that.
No, they are great. And this is something I used a couple of years back, and it was in sort of a fitness-type unit in a primary setting, and the class teachers loved them. They'd never seen them before. And as a result, the kids enjoying it so much, I ended up laminating some and putting them in scattered pockets around the playground. And then at playtimes, some of the children who weren't sure what they wanted to do or get involved in, that they would, I found them running to these areas around the playground, the visuals, and they were just with two or three of their friends and completing their workouts. And I suggested the school could get leaderboards or challenges for playtime to see which superheroes they could gather to get a sticker for that superhero or something. And the children bought into
that's
it wonderfully.
That's really a nice idea.
Yeah, they were running around to the Spider-Man one and being Spider-Man or Wolverine and whoever else they had on there. And they're just small pockets of children. The ones who over here weren't otherwise playing football. You know, sometimes you get the playground split up in sort of subgroups, don't you, and playing their own bits and pieces. And this sort of really captured the imaginations of lots of children who might otherwise just be sitting there chatting, which, you know, it's okay to do. But it got them up and doing something which they engaged them and they found it exciting, gave them a challenge. They are wonderful. I think they are Darebe, D-A-R-E-B-E-E. They have lots of other ones too, but superhero ones are.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Now, sort of.
Yeah, I think I'm going to steal that idea as well.
Yeah, well, hope you do. Feel free, and anybody listening, go ahead and see if it works for you. I mean, there's loads of things like that which are great for playtimes, little activities you can throw out there and get children busy with. Now, the last final question for you today, Rachel, which is more of a deep thinker, and I know you've had a busy 12 months, but I'd like you to tell us what you've learned about yourself or the PE profession in the last 12 months that you didn't know or believe before.
Wow, that is deep. I think knowing that it's all right to ask a lot of questions and also get things wrong at times. I say that because I felt when I was doing my training at my PGCE that I kind of felt really nervous to ask questions, and I wanted to get everything right because I didn't want to be the trainee teacher that didn't know what they were doing. And, you know, whether that was just me doubting myself or it was the environment that made me feel like that, I don't know. But I've definitely learned working in different departments. It's great if everybody's asking each other questions. If you walk in after you've had a not so good lesson and just say, I've had this problem, what would you do? there's always somebody who's willing to help you, and it's not judgmental. We're all in the same job. We all want the same outcomes. We all want to be happy. We all want success and progress. And since I've started sharing my good lessons and having people borrow my ideas, but also sharing my not so good lessons and saying, I don't know how to teach this better. I don't know how to deal with this student. I'm out of ideas. Can somebody help me? There's always somebody who's willing to say, oh yeah, give this a try. Or with this student, I try this. And just since I started doing that and asking for the help, obviously I've got a lot more answers. So I've got a lot more tools in my back pocket for when things go wrong. So if anybody's listening who's like training, don't be like me and don't be scared to get things wrong or ask for advice.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's in sort of our nature. I think lots of people can completely empathise with where you're coming from there, as can myself sat here. Just, you know, that fear of, it's almost fear of failure. And like you said, almost looking silly for asking something. And we sort of form in our own head this perfect picture that everyone else knows what they're doing and we shouldn't ask it. And they're everything's perfect for them. Life's all roses and I don't want to share this sort of weakness or this failure. But actually, that's what makes us better. That's what makes us stronger. That's how we learn. And I think there's so many people who don't open up and talk about things. And I think that's to their downfall, really. And I think it makes us so much better if we are willing to just share the good, the bad, the ugly, everything about what we do and acknowledge when we're struggling and finding things hard. I do this all the time now. You know, recently I've reached out to previous guests of the podcast on Twitter for advice about gymnastics teaching and saying, look, this is something I'm not fully comfortable and confident with. Can you give me some advice or guidance or pointers on what will work? Or when I work in a new school, if there's been a particular challenging student or class or something which I'm not fully happy with, I'm happy to go to the class teacher or the deputy head SLT and say, look, I'm finding this at the minute's tough. Can you give me any pointers or any support or guidance? What would you do? Because ultimately, you know these kids better than me. Ryan 5 years ago would have probably kept my voice and shut my mouth shut and not said anything and just said, okay, that's how it is and get on with it. But I'm happy to accept that people can help me and ultimately it'll make me better. And if it makes me better, I'm in a stronger position to help others further down the line from what I've learned. So I think that's a really sound, brilliant piece of advice, Rachel. And like Rachel just said, anyone who's listening, you know, do that. You know, don't be scared to ask questions for support, whether you're training, whether you're teaching an NQT, whether you've been teaching 10 years. Doesn't matter. There's always a good time to chat. Now, how can the listeners, Rachel, of the PE Umbrella today stay in touch with all things that you're doing, social handles and the like, to follow your journey over there in China?
Best way is probably Twitter. I like to try and get things on there. So I'm on Twitter at Rach061992. That's probably the best way.
Perfect. So anybody who's listening, get on over to Twitter, follow Rachel, see what she's doing. As I mentioned earlier in this interview, there are bits and pieces of videos and retweets and things on there that are useful for you to have a look at, maybe try and implement and magpie those ideas and take them into your own teaching as well. And there we have it, PE Umbrella community, another episode of the PE Umbrella done and dusted. Make sure you head on over to peumbrella.com for brief show notes of the episode. You can listen there or on your usual podcast platforms and repeat and repeat and repeat. Don't forget to pick up some of the free resources over there as well. But for now though, I'd like you to all keep on motivating, engaging and inspiring the children that you teach, and I'll catch you all again very soon under the PE Umbrella. Thank you so much, Rachel.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to the PE Umbrella podcast today. I genuinely hope you found some useful nuggets of information and insight from this episode. Remember, head on over to peumbrella.com for all of the show notes from past episodes to browse at your own leisure whenever you want. If you've got a spare minute, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate and review the show. It really would mean the world to me if you do so. Thanks so much, and I'll see you again soon under the Peumbrella.